I did not. Is your blower in mine again?
No.
Okay.
The Senate Transportation Committee will come to order. We've got a little readjustment in the agenda, and Senator Dibble is going to go first, and then we'll just go right back to the top of the list. But because there's some folks here that need to get on their way, we want to hear Senator Dibble's bill. Senator Dibble, Senate File 732.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. What Senate File 732 seeks to do is to make available to folks who are either looking for work in this difficult economic climate or are homeless and don't otherwise have access to transportation and need to get around to access all kinds of opportunities around the metropolitan area, working through the agencies, the nonprofit agencies that serve both of those populations, allow them to access transit fares at half price. It's a very simple bill. It's pretty straightforward. It simply says that the Metropolitan Council will work with those 501c3 agencies that are working with those who are seeking jobs or those who are homeless and otherwise lack their own private means of transportation, the ability to buy transit fares at 50% of their value. And it also goes on to direct the Met Council to make as many transit passes available as those agencies can use. It asks them to make sure that they're properly publicizing and making sure that these organizations know that these transit passes are available. Make use of available funds. There's, of course, job seeker funds that are available through federal program dollars and other sorts of federal program dollars from other agencies are available for transportation purposes. And there is some expense to administering programs like this, so they need to take advantage of that. And then it just asks that the Met Council come back to us in 2010 and just let us know how it's going, how the promotions are going, how the sales are going, what the benefit has been from doing that. Mr. Chair and members, I served on the Legislative Commission on Poverty by 2020, and during that commission's work that just concluded a few weeks ago, starting well over a year ago, we traveled the entire state of Minnesota. We held many town hall meetings, many one-on-one meetings, lots of face-to-face meetings in every corner of the state, the metropolitan area. And the one theme that emerged, not to my surprise, of course, because I serve on the Transportation Committee, been working on transportation issues for quite a while, but frankly to the great surprise of my fellow commission members, was transportation as a key barrier to folks in their ability to access the array of opportunities that they need to access, and just exacerbating their circumstances and keeping them locked into a situation that they otherwise might be able to climb out of. Right now, during this economic downturn, as I previously mentioned, more than ever, we need to make sure that people are able to get where they need to go to do what they need to do, to get to all kinds of appointments, to get to job interviews, to get to school, to get to see their family by way of support. Those sorts of connections are available only through transit. Many of these folks simply aren't able to access the kind of mobility that they need under our current system. This particular issue was highlighted by the recent fare increase that Met Council enacted. They're contemplating another, that was 25 cents. They're contemplating another 50 cents. I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but it's still out there. That would represent a 50% increase of the base level fare. If we asked drivers to increase their transportation expenses by 50%, we would have a riot on our hands here at the Capitol. 75 cents doesn't sound like a lot to some folks. That would completely knock people out of the ability to have any form of transportation. That's just simply a fact. Our argument is that this will add to ridership. It won't represent an expense to Met Council and Metro Transit. These are folks who will be riding the bus who don't now ride the bus. The folks who you're going to hear from in just a moment have done just an amazing job of advancing this issue and organizing around it, the folks from St. Stephen's. They'll share some of these points to you around homelessness and poverty and the need to access transportation to address those issues. But what I'm especially impressed by are all of the agencies that they've spoken with. There's a big list of them in a presentation that I had received earlier. All of these agencies have indicated that they could well take advantage of this 50% transit fare. Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, with that, I have Joshua Lang from St. Stephen's, who is also here to tell you why this is such a great idea.
Mr. Lang.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Senators. My name is Joshua Lang. I'm the director of the St. Stephen's Human Rights Program. We're located in South Minneapolis. At St. Stephen's, our mission is to end homelessness. I myself am a bus rider. I don't have a car. I've got two kids and a wife. It's our main form of transportation. We've been hit really hard with this fare increase, and so I know the people we're working with on the streets are hit even harder than us. We've done over 400 interviews since August when these fare increases came of people who are homeless, asking them, what do you use the bus for and how will you be impacted? There's five main concerns that came up. The first one was jobs, getting to jobs, and looking for jobs, straightforward jobs. Secondly was medical care, getting regular appointments, getting to the clinic, getting prescriptions. Third was housing. You've got single parents who are looking for shelter, looking for affordable housing. They're bringing their kids with them everywhere they go. We have youth who don't get shelter at night. They're given quarters and tokens to ride the bus. We don't have enough beds for youth. They're riding the bus at night as their main form of housing, which is very sad. Fourth is education. People are going to school to get their GED, going to technical school, going to college. Trying to better their life and get out of their homeless situation. The fifth one is family responsibilities, taking care of elderly parents, visiting their family, and especially being involved in their kids' education. That means going to the school for parent-teacher conferences, going to the school for extracurricular activities that their kids are involved in. Those are the five main points we found in those interviews. We think that this bill provides self-sufficiency and an opportunity for people to get off the streets. And our preliminary research in talking to agencies has shown that, you know, this could be cost neutral, if not just a small cost, because we are going to market this to so many programs that right now don't buy any bus passes because they can't afford them or don't think it's a good value. I ask you to strongly consider supporting this bill, SF-732, and I thank you for letting me speak today. We're going to have two people speak who do use the bus as their main form of transportation and who have experienced homelessness or are homeless, and that's Elsa and Chuck. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lang.
First of all, thank you for listening today. My name is Chuck. I use the bus at least twice a day, 6 days a week. The increase does mean a lot
to me.
Excuse me,
can you give your name for the record one more time?
Charles Hinshaw.
Thank you.
I use it for job search, to and from the two part-times, little small jobs that I do have now, for schooling, meetings, appointments for medical. I've been homeless for over 5 years. I have finally been stable enough to get a nice little efficiency apartment, which runs me about $500 a month. My little jobs, they add up to just a little over $600 a month, so that don't leave me a whole lot left over for clothing, food, medical pills, prescriptions, whichever you want to call it, clothing. It really does affect me a lot. My income is very limited. And if you hear me speak about us, I'm talking about the homeless community. To us, if, you know, like the government's talking now, the stimulus package, this 50% or the increases and stuff is really going to cut us down. And we're the people that is just going to grow every day because of the way the economy is. I want to thank you for your considerations and listening to me today.
Thanks for coming today.
Hi, thank you. My name is Elsa Cardenas, and I am a regular bus driver, rider, sorry. I ride the bus for everything. I'm currently attending a job training program at Twin Cities Rise, and they're helping me refresh my skills so I could go back to work. I've been homeless for about a year, and I'm also in recovery. So I'm nervous. I'm sorry. I just would like this bill passed, or the file 732, because I know Twin City Rise gives me a bus pass so that I could go to and from school. and I'm hoping to be able to get a job. My income is like, I think after the rent gets paid and stuff, I have like $96 a month. And if I were to have to buy that bus pass at, I think it's $85 right now, I would be left with like $11 for the whole month. So it would really help if this were passed. That's all I gotta say.
Well, thank you, and best wishes to you in your recovery. I think we need to hear from Mr. Shetnan because he needs to. Senator Bonoff, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dibble, I just want to thank you for bringing this forward. I appreciate it, and I really appreciate the name that you gave the bill, the self-sufficiency. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I tell you, this has been a model of community effort, community organizing. The folks behind me here have done a stellar job of
thank you. Of
working and bringing this issue to the fore. I did want to, Mr. Chair, just quickly draw your attention to the handout. And all of you in your spare time, as you're twiddling your thumbs looking for something to do, because you know we all have so much of that, take a look at the video that they've put together. They interview a lot of people who are affected by transit mobility access. And we spared you the presentation today. But it is very, very compelling. So if you can, go take a look at that video on YouTube. They did a fantastic job on that, and it really puts a face on the impact of the decisions we make here in the Capitol.
I'll make sure that Mr. Shetnan has that website address.
So I think he's seen it, actually.
Take it back to...
We brought that video over to them at the Met Council offices, and they saw it themselves.
Excellent. Senator Skoy.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dibble, I think this is really an interesting idea that you have here, but I listened to Mr. Henshaw's testimony. How would he access these lower-priced passes? I mean, he's working, he's not, you know, how would the mechanism work for him to access the pass?
Mr. Chair and Senator Skoy, he would, my assumption is Mr. Henshaw has a... is working with various social service agencies out in the community that's helping him, supporting him in a variety of areas of his life, and he can work through that agency to gain access to those transit fares. And it's up to the agency to give them to him at that 50% price or just give them to him.
Okay. Mr. Chair, so there would be agencies that would get access to buy the discounted passes, then they would assess the needs of the individuals that they're working with and put them on.
Mr. Chair, Senator Skoy, that's correct.
And Mr. Chair, Senator, is there some kind of sliding fee establishment, or how does that work?
Mr. Chair, Senator Skoy, that might be an idea that we work on in the coming days. No, at this point, you know, we simply make the half-price transit fare available to the agency. These are clearly agencies that are working with homeless folks who don't have access to their own private transportation or folks who are seeking work. It's implied or inferred that these are low-income folks mm-hmm. who are needing that kind of 501c3 social service agency support. And like I said, we leave it to their discretion if they ask for some consideration from that individual or to simply give that fare to that person free to them.
Thank you.
Senator Moi, we need to hear from Mr. Shetnan because he's got a 1 o'clock meeting on the federal stimulus bill, which might help us out.
Mm-hmm. So, Mr. Shetnan,
please.
Great. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and Senator Moi. I apologize. We're presenting in front of your committee on Thursday, and we have our update at 1 o'clock, so I appreciate that. Mr. Chair and members, and Senator Dibble is correct. I did have the pleasure to meet with the folks from St. Stephen's this past December, and at the time when we talked, they talked about the homeless community and their needs as far as access to the bus system, and they brought forth the video, which I agree is very compelling and was very interesting. And if you get a chance to see it, that would be great. One of the things that the council would like to do, and what we haven't been able to complete yet, the bill was introduced yesterday, is our fiscal note for the bill. And there's also, as members know, we have a budget issue currently that we all anticipate is going to probably get worse with the February forecast. However, I have talked to Senator Dibble this morning and our general manager of Metro Transit, Brian Lamb, and myself, and Jerry Sutton, who runs our MTS, our Metropolitan Transportation Services program. We're going to meet on Thursday to see, how we can potentially make this work. We have some ideas on how this may be able to move forward. There are some capital costs that Senator Dibble talked about in his testimony, but I think if we have a chance to sit down and have a conversation, we may be able to make some changes to this bill that that may work best for both of us. I always say that with the idea that we're waiting to see what the fiscal impact is, and I know that the folks from St. Stephen's mentioned that this may be a revenue-positive situation, and we will look at that. I mean, we need to look at this, and especially in these economic times, as Senator Dibble and the folks made their case to us this past December, we definitely need to take that into account. So I appreciate the opportunity to come sit before you, and I'd like to come back with Senator Dibble after spending a little bit more time with this and trying to work something out. I would appreciate that opportunity.
We would too, Mr. Shetton. As you can see by the interest from the committee, that this, we really want to try to do something here. And I know that there's a fiscal note that's going to be hooked on this, and sometimes fiscal notes can be quite large, and sometimes if the right parameters were put in place on the assumptions that it might be somewhat less. And if you guys can come to some agreement on what some of those parameters would be, it would really benefit a lot of people.
Well, Mr. Oops.
I'm sorry, Senator Moa.
If you need to go.
No, that's fine. I drive fast.
And it's downhill. And it's downhill from here.
Yeah, you should watch how you say that. There's two outside the back door, and they do have the authority to write the ticket.
Mr. Chair, I have a comment on Senator Skoy's line of question. I think that instead of it being a sliding scale up, I would think that what's going to end up, in practical terms, what's going to end up happening is that a lot of the nonprofits are going to buy these at half price, and then they're going to give them away. So
right.
That the mm-hmm. nonprofits are going to probably have to go find private dollars to purchase these so they mm-hmm. can give them, which is great, and I think we all will do our part. But speaking of fiscal note, I have a small amendment that I hope will address the fiscal note. And I think that the Met Council might like it. I had talked about this once and am looking into doing a bill, but I thought while this bill is before me, I might as well bring out the idea for all of you to consider. And in essence, what it is that, we ask for a lot of reports back, which is very important. We want report back on how we're doing. But I was thinking that we could help a little bit by making it an electronic report. And then if a member would like a paper version of the report, then we would ask for a paper version, but that the first sending out of the reports to multiple individuals would be electronically, if that's okay. So that's the gist of the amendment. Ms. Berzovsky has the technical language to that, and I would ask her to read it so that all the members will understand what it's
Ms.
trying
Berzovsky.
To do.
Ms. Berzovsky.
Mr. Chair and Senator Moa, on line 2.1, after F, insert notwithstanding section 3.195. On line 2.2, before submit, the beginning of the line, insert electronically. Line 2.3, before the period, insert comma, making paper copies available on request.
Does everybody understand the amendment? On the motion to amend, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, motion does prevail. Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Senator Dibble, I'm very much in support of this bill. Anybody that's been on this committee has heard me talk about different programs in different states. And I think to Mr. Shetland that we should be able to figure this out, because I've always argued that I don't think we charge enough on the other end, so I get kind of mad with some of the committee members that argue when we do raise fees, because those that can't afford it and those that are out of work should be able to get either free or discounted, and that's what they do in Illinois. They have a multi-layered system. In Illinois, I still laugh at that legislature because I can still land at O'Hare and ride all the way into downtown Chicago for $2, which I think is ludicrous. Why would I take any other transportation? I'd pay 10, 12, 14, 15 bucks to do it. It's just ridiculous because a van is 15, a cab is 45. So I'm hoping, Senator Dibble, that we do allow Met Council to adjust the rates for those that can't afford it, even though I did, I guess, squeal the last time I took the LRT down to the airport from my office so I could go out of town, although it was still saved me probably $18 to $20 a day over paying the MAC parking fees. So I use the LRT now when I go out of town for business. But we need to look at that, and we need to help those that can't afford it, and we also need to make sure that our fees on the other end are fair and you know, do maximize what we can collect at the fare box.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Jungbauer, you put in that bill, and then we'll hear Senator Marty's bill for 25-cent fare across the board in the same hearing, and we'll see where we end up.
I think we might end up closer to Senator Jungbauer. That's just the way the money is flowing these days. But, Senator Dibble, would it be okay if we put your bill on? Would it be okay if we put your bill on the table until
we can get a
better handle of the fiscal impact?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, that was going to be my request, that we hold for a bit on this bill.
Okay, Senator.
The Met Council has been great partners and very very positive to work with on this to date, so I look forward to further work with them.
Okay, Senator Dibble would move that Senate File 732 be placed on the table as amended. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Thank you, and thanks for coming, folks, and giving us testimony. Thank you. Is Senator Latz in the room yet? Oh, here he comes. We're going to jump around, and Senator Laurie, Senator Laurie, jump in here because it's going to take like 2 seconds to do your bill. Okay, Senator Laurie, and the reason why we're having to jump around is Senator Latz has a he's taking care of the kids today. So, Senator Laurie,
thank you, Mr. Chair,
you're a very brave man for carrying this bill. So let's keep it very short.
Senate File 556, as the title indicates, it is a bill to restrict certain activities at rest areas, and it's actually kind of alarming how many of your members have come to me with a raised eyebrow about that. I should be up front right at first. It's about garbage dumping primarily. I should tell you that the rest areas are not just the class ones that most people think of on the freeway with the flush toilets. There's over 250 rest areas around the state, most of them being class four rest areas with no buildings. We're talking about wayside overlooks and markers and the like. This was brought to me by my local DOT officials, and it is one that's actually we'll just jump right to the quick here. If you look at the pictures that were sent around, this is the one that inspired me to carry the bill. This is the Veterans Scenic Overlook, the top right there on Highway 23, Evergreen Memorial Drive for our veterans. And it's a place that I drive when I go to Duluth all the time, and it's a place I stop to pay my respects to our veterans. And it becomes very, very difficult to pay respects when certain individuals are so disrespectful as to throw refuse in the manner they do here. So we'll just jump right to what it is. It enumerates prohibited activities at rest areas, including failure to dispose of travel-related trash appropriately, dumping household or commercial trash, dumping refuse or waste from a vehicle except in designated receptacles. It prohibits consumption of alcoholic beverages except as allowed by statute. And it prohibits use of a site or building for any purpose other than rest, refreshment of travelers, or obtaining travel information. The violation is a petty misdemeanor except for the consumption of alcohol, which is a full-blown misdemeanor. So I have a couple of DOT officials, Rob Williams and Eric Rudin, but I don't think we need to get testimony. I would just jump right to questions.
Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Laurie, is all of that disbursement of around that area by humans, or have the raccoons helped a bit?
Well, you know, the humans are the source. But as you mentioned, there are raccoons, there's dogs, you know, local dogs will come and throw it around. I mean, I've seen TVs, refrigerators, couches. There's been reports of tires, furniture, animal parts, construction materials, appliances, and even dumping and discharge of sanitary refuse and waste from RVs and the like. And there is no actual statutory prohibition of this other than, a possible construction of the generic littering statutes. I think that that the important nature of our rest areas dedicated to traveler safety warrant a specific statutory reference to how we expect people in Minnesota to behave.
Mm-hmm. Senator Moy, this does have a petty misdemeanor in it, and have you requested to hear this bill in your committee?
I'm not sure. Usually
yes.
We take a pass on petties, but because of the misdemeanor and the potential for enhancement, I think we should send it to Judiciary.
Yeah, okay. I do have a formal request to send it to Judiciary, and we can work on whether that is the right level of mm-hmm. penalty, but we do think that it should warrant some specific statutory, and we'll be happy to come.
Senator Scoy moves that Senate File 556 be recommended pass and re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary. Further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Senator Latz. And we are going to make a couple changes because we have Ms. McCormick here, too. So I think, Senator Carlson, as soon as we're done with the Latz bills, we should hear yours so that Ms. McCormick can...
With permission, I think she'll be quieter if I hold her.
That's fine.
If it doesn't work, my ally is here.
We like kids in this committee. Mm-hmm. So, Senator Latz, which bill are we working on here?
Let's start with, if you don't mind, the cumulative suspension bill, Senate File 285.
285. Senator Latz, Senate File 285.
Mr. Chairman, members, you've seen this bill before in its essential form last year. It was accepted by the committee and rolled into the omnibus transportation policy bill, not become law shortly before the final bill was passed. It was stripped out because of some questions, I think, about language. But essentially what this does is it reorganizes the statutory provision that allows for or that prohibits the suspension of one's driving privileges if you receive a driving after suspension as a result of being suspended for failure to appear or pay fines. So, for example, if you get a speeding ticket and you don't respond, the court sends a notice to the Department of Public Safety. The Department of Public Safety says, hey, you didn't show up, and they send out a notice saying we're suspending you because you didn't appear in court for your speeding ticket. And then if you go out and you get a driving after suspension charge, that's a misdemeanor crime, and you get a citation for that, and you're off to court for that. If you get convicted for that, you're not supposed to be suspended again. You can see how the merry-go-round can just kind of accumulate these suspensions. Unfortunately, the statutory provision that says you're not to be suspended for this second driving after suspension is contained in the same subdivision as other suspensions for driving after suspension. And so the department basically has to look by hand at every suspension notice that comes through to make sure that this isn't one of them that they're supposed to suspend for. So instead of doing it that way, we propose to recode this particular driving after suspension charge as a subdivision 1A so that it can be modified, it can be handled by computer, basically. It can be sent in as a separately coded offense, and the Department of Public Safety's computers can recognize it and not trigger a suspension for this one. So there's no change in the substantive law, just a recoding of the statute so it can be done by computer instead of by individual eyeball, which in the long run should not only make sure that they get it accurate, because there are things that fall through the cracks when you've got thousands of suspensions coming through, but also should save money. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Latz, I think you brought your daughter just to make sure that you got that bill passed very easily. and I think we could all take a note.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonoff, there are other bills I would have needed it more on, I think, than this one, I hope.
Well, members, this is an issue that we've been kicking around for several years now, and Senator Latz has been, I believe this is your field of law, isn't it? Because I think I saw you in the yellow pages last night when I was coming through, so saw your picture in there.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, this is, I'm also directly familiar with the impact that this has on individuals through my own law practice. I should note, last time we were here, last year, Travis Schwantes from the Ramsey County Attorney's Office testified as to the sheer volume of driving after suspension cases that they handle. He anecdotally estimated about half of their morning misdemeanor calendar is driving after withdrawal, driving after suspension cases. Now, not all of them will fall into this category. And I may be seeing you within the next several weeks on another bill to address some of those concerns. But in this case, we're just trying to clarify the statute.
Senator Mwan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Latz, would you say that this bill, if it became law, would address some of the traffic, some of the volume in our courts in any way?
Senator Latz.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Mwan, yes, I think that it would. Probably some of the mistaken volume in the courts. Unfortunately, what happens is some people go in and they resolve these cases and they don't realize what's going to happen to the driving privileges again either. And the prosecutors are not under any duty to notify them of the ancillary civil consequences of the convictions. So it's not only that, but you end up with more people get driving after suspensions because they don't realize all of the other stuff going on. So yeah, it should help smooth that along. But my subsequent bill dealing with the levels of offense for driving after suspensions would have more of an impact as just sort of a future hint. And Mr. Chair, I misspoke. Mr. Schwantes was from the Washington County Public Defender's Office.
Is there anybody here that wants to testify in opposition? I didn't think so, because this is a huge problem. I'm sure that Ms. McCormick would be happy to see it go away and get cleaned up. So Senator Dahl moves Senate File 285. Before that motion, Senator Moi, this does have another penalty section in it, even though this is really not a new penalty. We're just kind of moving. Does your committee need to see this? Or
did you get a note?
We did not get a note.
Then probably not, Mr. Chair.
Okay, good enough. Thank you. Senator Dahl moves that Senate File 285 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Senate floor. On that motion, further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion does prevail. So thank you, Senator Latz. Now your next bill is Senate File 93.
Mr. Chairman, members, this bill is derives from my experience last year in shepherding the 35W compensation process through the legislature, at least on the Senate side. You will recall that in that case there were about 180 or so people that were injured or died in the collapse of the 35W bridge. I do have one of the most severely injured persons, Linda Paul, is here with me in support of the bill, and she'll have some remarks to add if you have the time to hear them. But the main point of the first thing that we did, that there was a broad consensus on, no real dispute, was that the aggregate cap for tort limits against the state in Minnesota of, at that time, $1 million was not enough money to cover anywhere near the potential damages that arose from the people who suffered in that bridge collapse. It would have reduced the actual available money per person to about $5,800, which wouldn't even cover the cost of a car, let alone anything else. So we agreed right away that the one thing that we would do, we'd eliminate the aggregate cap, the cap that applied to all damages arising out of a particular event. Want to walk them on? Okay. Yeah, I lost. Okay. Can you stand right here? So that was an early consensus. Now, what also became apparent, from my judgment, was that it wasn't really fair to say that if you were injured on the bridge that collapsed, that the state was going to waive the aggregate cap and allow you potentially to recover your full damages, or certainly far more, much closer to your actual damages. But if you were injured in another event a block away in which there were more than three or four people injured, your potential recovery would be reduced by the arbitrary application of that damages cap. Now, that damages cap was in place for a number of reasons. One is for some year-after-year fiscal certainty, your ability to project the impact on budgets. The second was because the state would not become necessarily a deep pocket. But the state is, far and away, has the most fiscal capacity of any government agency in the state. Even the large damages that were in the end paid out, or anticipating will be paid out through the state for the 35W bridge collapse, will not cause the state to run into bankruptcy or to have any major fiscal problems. $38 million was the total amount in the bill that was passed in a $34 billion budget. So significant amount of money, yes. Is it going to cause major fiscal headaches for the state as an entity? No. So that was the theory under which we approached the bill you have before you now. It would simply eliminate the aggregate cap for state liability. It does not touch local government or municipal liability. In fact, a number of changes that were made in the Judiciary Committee were put in there to strengthen the protection against municipal liability becoming subject to a no-cap situation. And if you wish, we can go into that stuff. The Judiciary Committee spent two hearings going over all the legal ins and outs of dealing with state liability versus municipal liability. I know one of the main reasons I think we're in front of this committee is that historically and still in fact in law, cases which arise out of injuries on state highways when there are tort claims against the state are paid for out of the Highway Trust Fund. And that's a limited pot of money, and there's a limited appropriation every biennium to account for that. In consideration of that impact, and after considering some comments from Senator Murphy and so on, what we added as an amendment in Judiciary, which I think should give this committee some comfort, was an amendment that said whatever your appropriation is out of the Highway Trust Fund, you will continue to do as you ordinarily choose to do. But if there is any liability arising on the state's part above and beyond that, then that liability would go to the state's general fund and not to the Highway Trust Fund. So essentially, it's a hold harmless provision for the Highway Trust Fund above and beyond your ordinary appropriation. With that said, I'd be happy to answer any questions in connection with the bill.
Questions from the committee. Senator Olsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Latz, one of the concerns I have is that when a catastrophe like this happens, that I thought the process worked pretty well, that, you know, I know we were limited by the per person cap, but of something of this, of an immense thing coming before the legislature and working it out as a body, I thought it worked pretty well, because an unlimited cap, you know, who knows what the next disaster is, you know, and you know, maybe it's $100 million. You know, we don't know. So I guess the point I want to make is that I felt the process worked pretty well, because there's so much time involved that there's always a legislative session to address the concern. And without having the unlimited cap, at least this way we approve this. So, you know, we stand to be, you know, recognized for it or criticized for it. But with an unlimited cap, you know, if it is $100 million, it's like, well, gosh, they just doled out $100 million. So I guess I thought the process was pretty good the way it worked.
Senator Lance.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olsen, you knew the process well because you also served on the Claims Committee and sat through many, many hearings and dedication in and outside of the committee to the process. I mean, I agree with you in the sense that the process worked fairly well. I wouldn't suggest it's a process that we want to go through for every incident that has three or four or more people that are injured. The way the cap system is set up now under current law, effective this past a year ago, January now, it's a $1.2 million cap aggregate and a $400,000 cap for individuals. So if you have more than three people injured, the four people are going to have to share a pot, which is going to be divided less than their individual cap would hold. So I don't think the legislature wants to be tied up in those cases every time they come through the system. They do happen probably once annually, I would gather. The other thing is this is not an unlimited cap overall. Although we'd be removing the aggregate cap, and the Judiciary Committee, by the way, considered this thoroughly and passed it unanimously, if we remove the aggregate cap, the total amount that could be paid out in any incident is still capped at the number of people injured or dead times the individual cap that would apply to that person.
Senator Mott.
Mr. Chair, members, I want to bring to this committee that in the Judiciary Committee, we were thoughtful and we looked at this issue long and hard. We were concerned about the impact that it would have on local governments, and that because the state and the local governments have parallel statutory sections governing us, we were concerned of its impact, and local government brought up the issue to us. So I think Senator Betzel is famous around here and being the striker of all findings. And indeed, it was Senator Betzel who also agreed that it was important to put the findings section in here. And Senator Betzel was the one who moved reluctantly the findings amendment onto this bill, because we felt that we found Senator Latz's arguments to be persuasive, but we were also very careful to make sure that this didn't have unintended consequences on local governments. And that when we did this, it would affect only the state and only in those circumstances as described by Senator Latz. But we also knew that it might have an impact on the transportation budget, and so we felt like this is an important discussion for the Transportation Committee.
Thank you. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Latz, I think maybe I'm not understanding. I thought I heard you say that there was a total cap. It's just that the new cap isn't a number, it's a formula. It's the number of individuals involved multiplied by the individual cap, which is going to be 1.5 after 09. Is that correct?
Senator Latz.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Skoy, that's right. That law would not change, so every individual would still be subject to the individual liability cap and statute.
And, Mr. Chair, Senator Latz, what I heard you say then is the aggregate cap is the number of individuals involved in the accident multiplied by that individual cap, because I think I heard you say that nobody could receive more compensation than the individual cap. And so if you have 10 people, it's 10 times 1.5 million. Am I getting that right?
No, Mr. Chairman, Senator Skoy. After I think it's July 1, the cap goes up to $500,000 individual, 1.5 million for aggregate. So if you had 10 people injured, each would be entitled to recover up to $500,000 if they could prove their damages. So it would be 10 times $500,000, $5 million, which becomes, as a practical matter, in implementation, the effective cap on the overall liability for that particular incident. But there is not a formula that would be placed in statute. The proposed bill would simply eliminate the overall aggregate cap that is in statute.
Okay, so I just used the wrong number. The individual cap is going to be $500,000, not $1.5 million.
Mr. Chair, Senator Skoy, that's correct. The individual cap, the aggregate cap is currently scheduled under statute to go up from $1.2 million to $1.5 million on, I think, July 1st of this year. That scheduled increase would not be applicable if this bill passes. It would just be eliminated altogether.
And I hate to belabor this, but I want to make sure that and there is a cap put on depending upon the number of individuals that have a claim then, because that's going to get multiplied by this new individual limit?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Skoy, the individual limit will remain in place. It's also scheduled to increase to $500,000 July 1st. So as a practical matter, yes, that would be the total exposure that the state would have to liability under that incident.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Bonner.
Mr. Chairman, going back to Senator Skoy's question, though, in reality, there is no cap because we aren't defining how many people could be, you know, in the accident. So in essence, there is no cap because there could, you know, if you had hundreds of people, while, and we can't foresee that, but if in fact there were hundreds of people, there, it would, each person would be multiplied by the settlement amount.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonoff, that's correct.
Well, but Mr. Chair and Senator Bonoff, but there is a cap because there's hundreds of people times 500,000 then, and that becomes the cap. It's just a big cap. And if you have a few people, then it's a smaller number multiplied by 500,000, and then you have a smaller cap. So it appears to me like it's a formula.
Yeah, the cap's just going to fluctuate. Depends on how many people are involved in the incident. And I, you know, Senator Latz knows how I feel about having some sort of accountability. And I think what we have here is the right direction. I do, even though you can't say, okay, it's going to be, you know, $10 million a year or 15 or whatever. But there is a cap. Granted, it's fuzzy and depends on how many people are involved in the incident, but there is a cap, and that kind of meets what we have discussed in the past. Meets my smell test. So, Senator Bonner.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Skoy, when I think of a cap, I think of it as a definite dollar amount, and we've got a per-person cap, period. We don't have a cap because the settlement, we could not foresee the cap on a settlement because we cannot foresee into the future and, you know, how many people. So we do have an individual cap, but we don't have a settlement cap.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to ask Senator Latz, you said that there, these limits that we have now are going to be scheduled to increase. Is this something that we will go back and legislate for additional increases, or is there some formula there or a timetable that says every so often that's going to increase?
Senator Latz.
Chairman, Senator Dahl, there's not a timetable. There's not a formula. The increases set forth in statute right now were a result of an agreement a number of years ago among all of those interested in this topic, and the legislature passed a bill saying on such and such a date the caps are going to go up to such and such an amount.
Thank you.
Senator Moore.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Latz, I wonder if you could explain to the committee members the pertinent sections that are, I think, squarely in this committee, which is on line 3.9 to line 3.11. The exception for the payment from the Trunk Highway Fund and how that would work in an incident if the claims were coming out of the Trunk Highway Fund.
Senator Latz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Moi. If a state vehicle were to get into an accident on a state highway and the allegation were that the state highway was somehow negligently maintained or constructed or engineered or whatever, and a claim were made against the state, as happens a number of times a year, then the ordinary course would follow where the Department of Administration, in consultation, if they wish, with the Attorney General's office, would address those claims and perhaps settle them or litigate them. And the resulting settlement or payment would come out of the money that the legislature annually or biannually appropriates to the Trunk Highway Fund for specifically the purpose of paying for tort claims. In the event that there were a large claim that would use up that available appropriation, whether it were one claim or there had been 10 claims before that biennium and the 11th claim was the one that would have busted that amount out, then the overage of that in the event of a claim of this nature would go to the general fund. And the general fund would then pay it, basically spreading out the obligation. But not coming out of the trust fund.
Senator Kielash and then Salzman et al.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Latz, my understanding of this, though, is that $500,000 cap is provided that the victims or the people that got hurt in this crash really need the whole amount. So that cap could certainly be a lot less, even if you had 100 people, with smaller claims actually being made for those less injured or less harmed by the accident, correct?
So, Mr. Chairman, Senator Kielash, the cap wouldn't be less because the cap is a statutory provision, but the amount of liability ultimately paid out could certainly be much less. The damages would still have to be provable by an individual seeking compensation. If they can only prove $25,000 worth of damages, then that's all they're going to be entitled to, no matter how much room is in the individual cap.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Saltzman.
So question on some history, if you might, Senator Latch, how many times do we know have claims against the state caused that an individual did not receive a $400,000 claim because the cap was in place? Do we have a history? And where I'm sort of going here is that I certainly appreciate all the work that you did this past year on this issue. But while there is a cap in place for the individuals, I might feel a little bit more supportive of this if there was a cap of, say, $10 million or $20 million, so that when we had some sort of extraordinary situation, we might be able to approach that and really think about it as we did in this last situation with the 35W bridge. Because it is an appropriation against the Trunk Highway Fund, that allows, there isn't really an opportunity for us to be a part of that discussion if there isn't an overall cap. So do you know if there has been situations where individuals have suffered repeatedly because of the $1.5 million cap that's in place now?
Senator Latz, maybe we can go back over 3.9, Senator Moy's point earlier.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Saltzman, exposure, the Trunk Highway Fund, is only in the amount that is biannually appropriate to the Trunk Highway Fund, which is, I think it's $600,000 per year, and has been the same number for many years, if I recall. And I'm not sure how close the annual exposure is, how much is paid out. But that would remain, whatever that number turns out to be this year, would remain the cap on the amount of money that would come out of the Trunk Highway Fund in response to any such incident. Beyond that, the general fund would be responsible for paying any damages. So if you look at the other question, a piece of your question, like how often does this really come into play? How often has the aggregate cap suppressed individual recoveries because their provable damages were greater than their individual cap? The provable damages of all the people injured in an event were greater than the aggregate cap allowed for them to recover. I don't have specific numbers. I can tell you in our preparation for the bridge collapse, we did get summary detail of probably a dozen cases in which the individual cap was hit. I know there were at least several incidents in which the aggregate cap acted to suppress the overall recovery. One I can remember specifically was, I believe, 1996. There was a state van carrying juveniles on I-94, I think it was up near St. Cloud or that area, that ran off the road into the median and ended up killing a few of the occupants, seriously injuring a few of the occupants. There were 10 or 12 deaths and injuries which arose out of that. And at that time, I think the cap that was in effect, I remember now, I think it might have been the 100,000 individual liability cap at that time. And I think it would have been 400,000 or 500,000 aggregate cap. Clearly, you couldn't compensate all of them for their total losses. And because of the law that operated at that time, they all got just a fraction of what they really were entitled to in terms of the damages they could prove. It doesn't happen that often, But when it does happen, it seems to me fairness would dictate that we have the fiscal capacity to make them whole to the extent they can prove their damages.
Senator Dalton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Latz, we're having a lot of fun with your daughter.
I'm glad you are.
She's very, very cute. I wanted to ask, and correct me if I'm wrong, we as a state, we're self-insured on these issues right now. Is that correct? And my question, Mr. Chair and Senator Latz, is if we go to this no cap on the aggregate, are we going to now be turning to having it underwritten for liabilities that could incur? Or what would be the next step, where, or would we remain self-insured?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dahl, I'm not anticipating any change in the self-insurance status, but although, you know, that's certainly something which you know, the executive branch and the legislature could look at. I don't know if that would be purely an executive decision, whether to seek separate insurance for the liability exposure of the state or the potential exposure, but it's not addressed in this bill.
Yeah, members, council tells me that we haven't blown through this cap for a long, long time, and Mr. Rudin is here from MnDOT, and I don't know if he has any particular numbers on what the Trunk Highway Fund has paid out, but we haven't hit the $600,000 for outside of the I-35W bridge for a long, long time. And we're going to have an opportunity when we do our budget to appropriate $600,000 or $650,000 or $700,000, whatever we feel comfortable. But that's where the line is drawn for the Trunk Highway Fund. You know, if somebody goes to court and they get a judgment against the state, they could still get more than what we have on this, more than what we will appropriate as a committee. But that's not coming out of the Trunk Highway Fund. Senator Jungbauer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think you actually kind of directed everything that way. I was going to say that a lot of this is really issues, I believe, that need to go to the Judicial Committee and other committees, and we are just really dealing with 3.9 to 3.11, I think, in this committee. So basically, that's the only thing that we need to worry about in terms of our discussion, is that Trunk Highway Fund. So I think you answered the questions. And
well, I think Senator Latz answered the questions.
Well, and I was thinking at this point in time, I was starting to get more out of his daughter than maybe his testimony. So
yeah. And I was just going to mention, I know somebody sitting to my left, if you make the offer of handing the daughter over, she's going to grab her. So. with that, Senator Moy.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the bill.
All right, Senator Moy, we haven't made any changes to the bill today, so Senator Moy moves that Senate File 93 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the full committee on finance. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion does prevail.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I was handed a note after the Senate File 285 was concluded, which informed me that, in fact, the Judiciary Committee had sent us a request to see the bill. You're correct. It does not contain any new substantive law changes, no new penalties or anything, but if Senator Moy would like to see it, I'm certainly happy to vote.
Mr. Chair, why don't we, can we just send it there? We might just pass him through, but we'd like to take a look at it.
Reconsider the motion.
Senator Olson would reconsider the motion by which Senate File 285 was passed. On that motion, all in favor? 285. Senate File 285. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Senator Moy moves that Senate File 285 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. All right, great. Senator Carlson, can we get your bill quickly? Because I know that Ms. McCormick needs to get back to her work. Thanks again, Senator Latz. It was a blast.
So,
and if you're looking for a babysitter, I know where you can find one. Right. Senator Carlson. Senate File 757.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 757 removes conflicting language regarding fuel decal fee. This is almost entirely a provisor-like bill. It corrects some things in the past and removes a reference to the Commissioner of Public Safety establishing the fee. I have here Ms. McCormick from the department, and she will describe the details of the bill.
Ms. McCormick, welcome to the committee, and thanks for your patience.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, Pat McCormick, Director of Driver and Vehicle Services. And unfortunately, we have the wrong number at the top. So it says Senate File 575, but it's Senate File 757. That was probably my mistake, reading it too quick. So anyway, I apologize for that error. We'll get it corrected. This bill is being brought forward by DVS because when we, as you may remember, in the 2007 session, we ensured that all the fees that relate to the international fuel tax agreement that the department administers were deposited in the vehicle services special revenue account. And unfortunately, at that particular time, we did not realize that there were conflicting statutes that were not deleted. A statute that refers to a rule that would conflict with the law as we have it in Minnesota Statutes 168.12, as well as where it also says that the commissioner can establish a fee. And so we're just, this is a technical or bill just to try to ensure that we don't have any conflicting statutes related to the international fuel tax agreement and its administration.
Any questions from the committee? Anybody else wants to provide testimony on this issue? Seeing none, Senator Carlson moves that Senate File 757 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Senate floor. And I think this is a consent calendar item, Senator Carlson, that it kind of saves us a little bit of time and expense at the Senate floor. So, on Senator Carlson's motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Thanks, Ms. McCormick.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Carlson. Next up, I think we have a couple of Senator Scoey bills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair and members, if I could talk about these two bills together, because they are connected, and then we will move them separately. Late 90s, a number of counties in north central part of the state started an initiative to develop a county veterans memorial highway, and Otter Tail County was the first county to successfully pass a resolution to their county board and bring the county memorial highway into being. A small portion of the Otter Tail Veterans Memorial Highway goes on Highway 59, so they have state statute language doing that. Becker County and Clearwater County were working on it, and their counties have passed resolutions for their county portions. I think Becker County did it in March of 07, and Clearwater County did it in later in 07. And the reason that these highways or these bills read the way they do is a fair amount of the memorial highways are on county roads. But there are segments that, in order to connect these portions together, are on state highways. And so we do need to have state designation of those portion of the state highway. And if these two bills, Senate File 451 and 452, become law, there will be a Veterans Memorial Highway that goes from the northern part of Clearwater County all the way down through the county on county and state highways into Becker County, traveling on a county road down to 34 and on down into Ottertail County. And so it gets to be quite a network. And I would appreciate the committee's support to designate these portions of the state highway that's in those these two, three counties as Clearwater Memorial Highway in the Clearwater County and Becker County Memorial Veteran Highway in the Becker County portion.
Members, just to refresh everybody's memory, down at the bottom of both of these, it makes a statutory reference to 161, 139, and that's the portion that there's no state fund involved. This will all be Senator Scoy's constituents will raise the money, and commissioner will designate what a suitable sign is, and then your folks will pay for it, and MnDOT will put the signs up, and everybody will be happy. Now, Senator Scoy, what is your intention with these two bills? Did you want them to run on their own? Did you want us to put them in an omnibus bill?
Well, Mr. Chair, I would take some advice from you on that. We could move these to the floor, or we could incorporate them in the omnibus bill. It doesn't matter to me.
Senator Scoy, I believe that maybe we should dual track them. Why don't we go ahead and move your bills to the floor so that we can get action on the Senate floor, so that the House knows that we're serious about doing some of these things. And then when it comes time for inclusion into the omnibus bill, I mean, any member can move their bill for that, and we'll make sure that you're part of the skeleton of that bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So with that, then I would move Senate File 451 be recommended to pass and referred to the Senate floor.
On the Scoy motion, is there any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Mr. Chair, I would then move Senate File number 452 be recommended to pass and referred to the Senate floor.
Further discussion on 452, seeing none on the Scoy motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Both by unanimous. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Senator Scoy and members. I think that's the end of the committee. And Thursday we're going to start right on time, hopefully. Hopefully it's not right on Senate time. But we're going to hear the overview from the Department of Transportation and the Met Council on the stimulus money. Now, in regards to transportation, Department of Transportation, Mr. Rudin, the information of likely projects is on your website. So if folks could, if you haven't already, do a little homework, check that out. And I believe that the Met Council has already put out, Senator Dibble, an issue paper in regards to what they intend on using their stimulus money for. Or they've listed some parameters, I believe. But we're going to hear from them on Thursday as well.
Right. Yeah, I'm not sure if that's posted on their web or not. But maybe we should. I mean, if it would benefit the committee members to read that ahead of time, we should ask them for that. I can take care of that. I'll make sure it gets around to folks ahead of time.
Thank you.
All right.
With that, I believe the committee is adjourned. Thank you.